Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. To get involved, send email to techaccessweekly@gmail.com. Follow TA_weekly on Twitter or call 260-2-ASK-TAW. This is Aaron.
And Rodney.
And this is episode 116 for Friday, November 11th, 2011. 63.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, this is the last day in the 21st century that we will see a binary date.
Scary thought.
Yes. And the digits in this date add up to 63.
Yes, if you do the conversion to binary.
Yes.
And at approximately 11:11:11 a.m. this morning, it was considered Nerd New Year.
It was 11 a.m. 11 a.m. 11:11:11 11 minutes and 11 seconds.
11 hours, 11 minutes, 11 seconds.
And then it was November 11th, 2011, 11:11:11.
Yes, and here in the U.S., a lot of us have it as a holiday because it is Veterans Day.
Yes, and we, of course, use this day not only as some of us have a day off work, but also to remember the friends, relatives, and loved ones who have sacrificed themselves for our country.
Very true.
And so thanks to all those in the armed services.
What is it they say? Thanks to all the boots in the air and boots on the ground or something?
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so.
As we try to get this podcast going on multiple days late.
Oh, God.
This has been the worst 3 weeks of my work, and everything has just seemed to be working against us.
Yes. Hopefully it will stop at some point. Cease being an uphill battle to get this out. Should we go into some listener mail?
Why not?
We have gotten a message, actually a bunch of messages from Brian Watson about tips to keep notice of. So thank you very much for that, as always. And to anyone who sends us messages of stories that we might want to consider.
Yes, JoJo, they are sort of our little producers.
Yes. JoJo sent us a question about how to use the notification center with VoiceOver, and that is something I'm going to have to look up and figure out and then email back, because I know I discussed the answer in my notification center tip, and now can't remember.
Ah, go figure.
Yes.
You know, it'd be great if there was a website you could find that at.
Well, yeah, but I'd have to listen to the whole tip, and seeing as how I just found the email message like just now, I don't have 20 minutes to listen to that tip. That was kind of a long tip.
That's true.
So, Ryan emailed us in reference to one of our previous episodes when I mentioned that the NLS digital player would not work with my thumb drive that I had. Rodney found a thumb drive that he had that it works with.
Which is actually the same thumb drive that you were trying to use, I believe.
No, it isn't.
No?
Different.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought it was the same one.
Nope.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't think so. It feels different. But beyond,
that's what she said.
Beyond that, you tried using it. Did you try it after we had you had updated it? No, you were able to update it with it, so it worked.
I would have to update it with it in order to try it without the after the update.
Yeah. Well, anyway, mine didn't work. His worked. And Ryan found a Kingston Traveler that also works with the NLS player that he's had good results with.
The one that I used was a SanDisk Cruiser, which is a little titanium metal.
See, why does mine, because mine's the same. It's
also a
SanDisk. I
don't know. I'm kind of wondering if it may be something with the formatting in Windows 7. We may try it again and see.
I formatted it as FAT32 like I was supposed to.
I think I actually formatted it as FAT, like 16-bit FAT.
Hmm. Anyway.
Not to be confused with arm fat or hog fat.
Or flabby fat.
Exactly.
Or hot fat.
Mm, fat. Mm.
Gavin Loyal listener to The Melting Pot and Tech Access Weekly, what did I do to deserve such loyalty?
I don't know. I mean, if I had to
How is this possible?
If I had to stay up till early morning like he does in order to listen to Melting Pot, I think I would probably...
I'd probably shoot myself.
Yeah, there you go.
But Gavin from South Africa says that he has managed to restore a backup install Windows 7 using a restore point. And he needed some sighted assistance, but not a whole lot. And he finally got that to work. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, I believe he said the biggest catch that he needed was when you actually reboot the PC, you have to like hit F12 to do your boot menu, and selecting the CD option to make it boot from the CD was the only sighted thing that he really needed.
Yay.
Which is a good thing. Some computers will actually allow you to set it so that it looks at the CD automatically, but in all of my years, that works about 75% of the time.
Yeah.
For some reason, it just, you tell it to go through the boot sequence and always look at the CD, and sometimes it will just bypass it anyway. I don't know whether that's a Windows thing or fake DOS thing or what, but oh well.
And Christian had a question about multiple iPhones and one iTunes user account. I mean, syncing multiple iPhones with one iTunes user account. I guess your iTunes user account is licensed for up to 5 devices?
Actually, it's 5 computers and 10 iOS devices.
Okay. So he's wondering about using his wife's cell phone and his cell phone on the same iTunes account.
Yeah, and I don't believe you'll have actually a problem with that, because it should back up the two devices in separate locations.
Yeah, I'm assuming that it will, because they're different devices. And when you put one, you plug one in, you know, they register them by whatever serial numbers or whatever. So one of them says Aaron's iPhone, and then you plug another one in and it'll say, iTunes does not recognize this device. Would you like to give it a name? And then you can name it Rodney's iPhone.
Yeah, so it's like if I go into iTunes right now and I go under Edit and Preferences on my Windows computer. Since we don't have a Mac yet.
No.
Yeah. If I go into Edit and Preferences and I go to the option that says Devices, it shows me that on my computer currently, I have device backups. I have your parents' iPad and my iPhone.
Oh, that's right. You did make it.
So it should, in all cases, make sure that it puts it in two separate locations when you actually attach multiple devices. So I don't think you would have a problem as long as apps are purchased with the same purchase ID in the Apple Store. You can share them across iOS devices. Now that there is an iCloud, you can go to iCloud.com and create your own iCloud account.
I haven't done that yet.
So that's kind of a good thing. I actually went and created a new iCloud account so that it's different than our purchase history, because that seems like it's going to be confusing in the long run if I'm using that one and we're on multiple computers. So anyway,
we
in a long roundabout way, that
answers
it, I think.
I think that's about all the listener mail we got.
Yeah, which was quite a bit.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Thank you so much, everyone, for your participation.
Yes, and lots of tweets are good. I've been talking on Twitter today, seeing as how it is a vacation day, about the wonderful Quaker Quakes mini rice cakes. You can get them in wonderful flavors, and you can order them at an extensive price on Amazon.com, but you can find them in your local grocer for reduced prices.
They're good.
Yes, and we've been exchanging things on what flavors are good. So far, the apple cinnamon are the best flavor, and what was it, the caramel corn?
I like the caramel ones. And you like the sour cream and onion ones.
I'm liking,
but they're not crunchy to me. They taste like chalk.
Well, kind of, but they kind of give me the idea of Funyuns.
Yeah, I mean,
which
it's
are like
weird
fake onion rings that you can buy in the store.
I like those, but for some reason they don't taste like that to me. But I will say they are deceptive, because they don't taste strong, but boy, do they leave a taste on your tongue.
Yes.
Woo! Woo!
So anyway, now that we have digressed into yet another rat hole, we should probably head into something a little bit better.
Security news, of course.
Why, yes, the scary stuff that makes everyone irritated.
And beyond to read, because that was so boring. Actually, that started out as fake and ended up being real.
Go figure. That's what it's like living in a house with me. Or you.
Anyway, this week was Patch Tuesday, and Windows rolled out a security fix for the TCP/IP stuff that was going on, but not quite ready to fix the DQs. DQ, UQ, whatever that thing was yet.
The DQ, the yes. DUQU that is out there, that's sort of a botnet. Apparently there is a issue with Microsoft and a DLL that it can access. They patched four different bulletins worth of issues this month, and they did not fix the DQ, but they are working on an issue and on a resolution to the issue. And there is actually a 0-day workaround that you can do for this that they actually sent out last week as an emergency out of band patch. The Patch Tuesday will actually require you to have a reboot, so be aware of that.
Yes.
Make sure that you update your PC, whether it is Vista, XP, or Windows 7. Not really a whole point in explaining what the different options are, because they're always kind of the same. There's always a 0-day. Somebody can exploit your computer by running code, or you might be exploited by some crazy plugin that you've downloaded. So it's kind of always a yawner.
Yeah, and it's always, I mean, just good to mention, Patch Tuesday, security, update.
Yeah.
That's
so last week, there should have been an update, small one, and then this week there should be a major update that you need to reboot for. So that's
right.
A good thing. Always good to remind other folks that are not tech savvy to make sure that they are running those updates. You will go and try and help someone with their computer, and you'll find that they haven't run the updates since they purchased the computer 2 years ago.
Ooh, I bet my parents haven't run updates in like 4 years.
I seriously doubt it. Unless it's still automatic on their computer, which I don't know.
It's
sometimes
possible.
People see those little balloons down there saying, I'm ready to update. And they'll go, no, I don't want this anymore. Turn it off. So anyway, in other news that broke yesterday, Thursday, November 10th, the Valve network called Steam was actually hacked.
Yes, this is, I guess, a gaming type of thing where you can play games against other people over the internet.
Yeah, I guess the hack actually took place on Sunday of this week, but they were actually having other issues up until yesterday. And from what Valve is releasing, possible credit card information as well as other personal details has been leaked. They do not have any conclusive evidence that your encrypted credit card passwords and such have been retrieved by whoever did this particular hack.
Yeah.
The forums on the Steam website are still closed until further notice, but people are able to use the gaming site where you can actually go and purchase things. I guess in the blind community, it's kind of like RS Games,
yes.
But for mainstream things. Like
but for
Call
mainstream
of Duty.
Things, and you actually have to pay for the games.
Yeah. So if you know anybody in the area that uses Steam, you might want to point this out. All users of Steam should have received an email notification about this, but you know how it is when people aren't
with
gaming
email
and
notifications.
Not reading email, or it goes to their junk mail or something.
Yeah.
In something that is sort of in the pirate world, in the UK, the music industry over there, not the Hollywood people here in the US, have actually asked the BT communications area in the UK to stop allowing people to go to the Pirate Bay.
Yeah. I don't know how this is going to work. I don't know how the providers are going to implement this, but, you know, it may or may not happen. Who knows? Pirate Bay is still around. Even if they block the website, people may still be able to get around that.
Yeah, it's going, the way I understood the article, which I'll include in the show notes, there is a law that is going through in the UK wanting them to ban certain websites from being accessible, which, I mean, even China tries to do this, and tech-savvy people in China actually get around them. I guess they're trying to argue that content is intellectual property and shouldn't be stolen or shared. You know, it's one of those fuzzy things.
Gray area.
It's a bad thing when the government is trying to get involved to protect companies and their property. That's always kind of a shaky thing.
Yeah, always a shaky area. Of course, this is coming from people in a country who are very protective of our government, private and public rights. Even over there, though, I know in the UK it's a pretty shaky situation.
All they got to do is say that the Pirate Bay has child porn.
Yeah.
And they'll get it passed.
Yeah.
That's usually the tactic with these things.
Let's, absolutely.
Go for the panic and, dear Lord, what's going on? Finally, a security patch has been released in iOS 5.0.1 that came out on November 10th. The only problem is it did not save famed hacker security expert Charles Miller, who you will know from the Pwn to Own contest that always comes up with different hacks for Safari and the Mac OS in order to win whatever prize money they offer in computer equipment. He released on Monday of this week an application that would exploit a hole in iOS that would allow for applications to execute malicious unsigned code.
Mm-hmm.
I guess iOS tries to have sort of a sandboxing area where all of your code that goes into the store has to be digitally signed and verified to each developer. Well, he put it out there showing that, yes, this exploit does exist. Apple responded by banning him from the developer program for 1 year. And iOS 5.0.1 came out this week on November 10th, and it fixed that along with issues for Australian users and trying to access Siri.
Yes.
I guess the dialect just wasn't understandable.
It's the dialect, and they picked Australian users. They have not yet addressed the Scotch users. I know a lot of people from Scotland who just cannot get Siri to understand a thing.
Oh, I thought it meant Scotch drinkers.
No, Scotch accented users of the iPhone 4S.
Brings a whole new meaning to me.
Okay. Yeah. And so iOS 5.0.1 came out. It addressed that with regard to Australian English. Also tried, there's the key word, tried to address the battery drain in the iPhone since the 5.0 upgrade.
Yeah, and there are reports from people on the forums at Apple that say that their issues have been resolved. But Apple has also agreed that some of the complaints are still continuing and there are additional issues that they are currently working on. I guess there was one poster that was noted in a couple of articles where they had charged their iPhone up to 100% and they left it overnight sitting on their nightstand for like 8 hours and they had already lost 80% battery.
Oh my God.
And they lost 5% battery in just trying to send a text message.
Oh my heaven.
Yeah, so it's not sure as to whether that is an extreme case, whether other people are experiencing that on other phones besides just the 4S or not. And Apple says that they are working on additional fixes to it. So is it going to be another antenna gate? Don't know. They are also working, this release also fixed a documents in the cloud problem, which I haven't seen any mention of to what that means.
Yeah, I don't know either. I'm not sure. I don't know whether it's that iCloud was having trouble storing documents in it or you're having trouble retrieving them from the iCloud.
Yeah, I hadn't had time to look at what that actually means. They also added a multitask gesture to the iPad 1, not the iPad 2.
And not the iPhone
or
the iPod Touch.
Yeah, they already had the multi-touch, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So that is something. We also put out a daily tip today, episode number 330, that actually depicts how to do the iOS 5.0.1 over-the-air update.
Yes, that was fun. Some people say they have done it in as few as 10 minutes. It took me a little over 20 minutes to do and took you a little over 20 minutes to do. What essentially happens is you download it. That process actually is pretty swift. It was a 40 meg update and it took about 5 minutes to download. So think about trying to download a whole new iOS over the air. That would take a long time.
Yeah, it wasn't 666 megs as before.
No, but the actual process had to go through two reboots. And the first reboot, VoiceOver actually did come up and say VoiceOver on, and then it immediately rebooted itself again. And the second reboot, at least for me, VoiceOver did not say, I'm back. I had to actually push the unlock button, and then VoiceOver came on.
Yeah, I guess when it gets to the point to where the iPhone will sort of chirp at you, you know that you probably have another 5 minutes to go.
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of what it came down to.
That's one thing I was thinking of. I did not have my iPhone plugged into any kind of power source.
Mm-hmm.
That is one benefit. If you are a voiceover user, to have it plugged into a power source when you're doing these over-the-air updates, because you will get a chirp when it comes back up.
Oh.
If it's rebooting. And, you know, when it turns on immediately.
That's why I got it and you didn't.
Yes, that's why you got it. And I was saying it during the tip, but I edited that part out of the tip because it was surrounded by long periods of silence while we were waiting. But, yeah, that's a benefit. So next time I do an over-the-air update, I will connect it to a power source, even if it's just the computer, because I'll get that chirp.
Yeah. So that's kind of the mystery of doing anything like that. It's just like a computer. It has to reboot. So
and
does that about 3 times, I think, during the whole process?
Yeah, I think 3 times. Incidentally, Jonathan said that, Jonathan Mosen said that he has, it's a benefit to have hearing aids when he's doing things with the iPhone that require it to update and reboot, because he can switch his hearing aid to coil mode, and then he can put the phone up to his ear and hear it doing things. Now, that's just freaking creepy.
Yeah, because I hold the phone up to my ear and I don't hear anything.
Well, I
not
guess
really.
When you have your hearing aid in coil mode, whatever that means, it magnifies things or something. And you can hear clicks and chirps and hums and
perhaps
all kinds of stuff. Maybe I should buy me a hearing aid just for that.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
But Jonathan works for Freedom Scientific and is the GM of MushroomFM.com.
Yes.
Where you can find the Melting Pot Show on Sundays from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
Yes.
Might as well get that plug in there while
absolutely, yes. You beat me to it. So,
Yeah, I've kind of got that down a little
bit.
Yeah,
you've got that down. Apple has not come up with a plan for how to address the battery drainage issues in the 4S. We're not sure if it's a hardware or software thing. Hopefully, if it's a hardware thing, they'll come up with, you know, a program similar to what they did with the iPhone 4 antenna gate issue.
Yeah, or give a replacement.
Yeah.
But the way that it just seems like they have so many versions of the iPhone out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like before, you basically heard of people having antenna issues because of certain ones that, okay, this one came out on the 23rd week, but okay, you got a phone that's on the 35th week of development and it doesn't have the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, seems like a never-ending issue with Apple. Apple, in other news, has agreed to replace frayed MacBook T-style MagSafe adapters.
And these were the ones that were installed into the MacBooks when they first came out. And
yeah, it started in the 2006 edition.
Yeah, and these are the magnetic, you know, adapters that can just pop right off. And they have a different connector than the current adapters that are shipped with the MacBook. And so, apparently these in 2006, people were claiming, the first ones issued, that they were prone to fray and damage. There was actually a lawsuit going on about this, and it was not proven, I guess, to Apple's satisfaction that cords really were being damaged, but they agreed to replace them anyway. And so in order to get them replaced, you take your cord to the
Apple store,
to the Genius Bar or whatever. And they apparently have a list of ways to determine whether your cord was accidentally damaged or actually damaged.
Yeah. You will need to take your MacBook as well as your cable in. You will be able to, get a replacement part until December 31st, 2012,
yeah.
Or you can get a money back return if you do so before
March 21st of 2012.
Apparently, all people who have purchased said cable or had issues should receive an email from Apple. And if you have concerns or questions, you might want to call the Apple hotline or visit your local Apple store. In the really hot topic of Siri for Apple, Apple is finally saying,
not
looking at Siri.
For other devices.
Yeah.
So engineers have said that Siri is not being, they are not making builds of it for the iPhone, and you know, iPhone 4 and iPod Touch and all that stuff. It's just for the 4S, and it only works on the 4S.
Yeah, and there have been a little conflicting information coming out because they, there are reports that some developers have received a build of Siri for iPhone 4 and iPad.
So
but that hasn't really been confirmed. Apple's saying that they're not going to do it. Hackers are trying to jailbreak the iPhone and actually get Siri to work on older editions. Which there are videos on YouTube that indicate that if you are so interested.
Mm-hmm.
But
we are not advocating jailbreaking just for Siri.
But I don't care for jailbreaking that much because the few times that I've done it,
it just seemed to slow the phone down.
Well, the phone got a little slower and I seem to have more application crashes.
Yeah.
It just was a little bit more unstable.
That and I didn't see much of a point.
Plus, Apple is probably not wanting you to have Siri on that iPhone 4 because it makes you want 4S even more.
Exactly.
Because there really isn't a whole lot of updates other than the processor and a little bit of the camera, and Siri is the main thing.
Those are the main things.
Into.
Yeah.
Now, on to another thing. The
Apple
iPad is helping folks in Oregon to vote.
Yes. Oregon has worked with Apple, and Apple has donated approximately, I think at this point, 5 iPads to test with this.
That's a large number to be approximate.
Yeah, I think only 5 at this point. But they have, Oregon has developed a $75,000 app. Not $75,000 per person, but $75,000 for the state of Oregon to run an election ballot on the iPad. So they have taken these iPads to testing places like nursing homes and other places where people with who are senior citizens or disabled might hang out, I guess is the word I'm looking for.
Must be down at the post office.
Yeah, you know? Tested it. So what essentially happened is the person made the choice on the iPad, I guess double tap your candidate type of thing, and then the ballot was printed on a portable printer. And they were trying to use this in place of an e-voting machine. I guess the idea is for people who cannot get to a poll, to a voting machine, to vote, they can try it on the iPad.
Well, there's a large portion of the voting eligible community that are probably in seniors' homes and
other absolutely.
Places, and they just can't get to mm-hmm. or just find that it's a little too difficult to have to worry about getting their transportation.
I mean, I can
from.
See that for myself going to vote. Gee,
yeah.
I have to go with someone who's also going to vote, and they're going to be, like, looking over my shoulder, seeing who my choices are, and I just don't like that idea.
Yeah, and two, with this kind of option, there would be the voiceover option for someone that cannot see.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's mm-hmm. A big plus. Of course, there are worries about people hacking these things.
Of course, just like electronic voting machines get hacked all the time. So,
yeah, and the companies that try and develop these things, they try to make them secure, but they just aren't quite there yet.
Not quite, but...
And at some point, maybe there'll be actual internet voting.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty cool thing for the iPad to start doing that, and internet voting would be even awesomer. Woo!
Yeah, but I see that being more of a hack.
Yeah, that would be, ooh.
I mean, we saw the, what was it, the iNote attempt at a...
Oh my God!
Reader for the iPhone,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not very
oh,
good.
How horrible can you get?
In news that is probably exciting to Steve Jobs as he looks down upon us and everyone else, or as someone in a podcast earlier this week said, looking up at all of us. Bad taste joke there by someone. I'm
terrible.
Not going to mention who it was. Adobe has said that, you know, mobile flash just really isn't as good as it needs to be on mobile devices. So we're going to stop making versions of that. Versions 11.1 will be the last one that you get.
Yeah, they are going to continue to support it, but not upgrade it or make new versions of it. And it's also going to be happening with TV components, too.
They're going to stop develop. They're going to support it for non-PC devices like televisions. I guess maybe it's in smart TVs and things. They're going to continue to support that, but they are no longer going to develop. They are instructing for developers to really consider HTML5.
Yeah.
So I guess this is a... I guess this is a kudo that can go out to Steve Jobs, because mm-hmm. he said no Flash on iOS devices, and I guess you could say he pretty much killed mobile Flash.
Yeah, and I mean, even on devices, Google agreed, you know, in Android to work with Adobe for Flash. And it's been pointed out that even on those devices, it wasn't really reliable. It didn't work very well on the mobile devices, that Android devices that tried to support it. And so Adobe's just kind of, you know, putting this project on the back burner, no longer going to develop it. They're going to try and help developers somehow package Adobe Air components into apps, but no longer using mobile Flash plugins.
Yeah, which a lot of Adobe Air isn't accessible either. No. So doesn't really bode well for accessibility, but maybe it'll get rid of some of these mobile menus that are in Flash for websites.
Mm. Speaking of updates, or does this deserve another ding?
Let's give it a ding.
Firefox has come out with Firefox 8.0. Didn't we just have an update? I say this every time,
yeah,
but it's a little ridiculous.
This quick push of theirs is getting a little bit irritating.
Apparently now they have integrated Twitter and a search box.
Yeah, you can now choose Twitter as a search engine.
That's
exciting.
Bizarre.
I can't. Doesn't appear to be able to tweet from the search box. Now, that'd be really cool.
Now, that would be cool.
But you're able to actually search Twitter. So that's something, I guess, because a lot of people do search Twitter in order to find their updated news or issues going on, you know, like if there's an earthquake or tsunami or bad winter storm.
Right.
So that's kind of cool, I guess, sort of. They are also allowing for better control of third-party applications, which Yay. Are your plugins / extensions that you can download. They were finding that a lot of apps were trying to forcefully install themselves on your browser. So now Firefox should pop up a message requesting you to verify that, yes, I do
want
this.
You want them, yeah.
Apparently the Skype plugin was one noted that they sort of created this for, because it would kind of do things that you wouldn't be completely aware of.
Whoops.
Now, there are apparently some reports of accessibility advances in Firefox 8.
Yes, one of them in particular is that sometimes, especially with Linux systems running Firefox, there was a problem when using screen readers with printing from the browser, and that has apparently been fixed. Also, some other bugs and miscellaneous things, getting Firefox to work better with screen readers. And the article I read, it was a little bit too technology-oriented. I don't know. I mean, referring to parts of the Firefox code that don't mean a thing to me. But apparently, there have been some improvements that iron out loading of iframes and reading other parts of web pages with screen readers. Multi-check boxes and other types of information.
Yeah, and if you're curious, I will include that in the post for this so that you can get to that article on Marco's accessibility blog.
Yes, marcoz.de. There is a summit going on in December, the M-Enabling Summit, at the headquarters of the Federal Communications Commission in Washington, D.C., and it is going to be addressing the use of mobile devices by senior citizens and persons with disabilities. There are going to be a number of conferences and keynote speakers. Members of the Obama administration are going to be speaking, as well as there are going to be private corporations involved. Everything from the DAISY Consortium to, a lot of different companies. I did not see Apple, Google, or Microsoft in the list. Maybe I was overlooking something. But apparently there are going to be about 75 different companies there represented who have some sort of stake in the mobile marketplace.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So that is in December. I'm not sure exactly how to register for it, but there is an article on our website that talks about it from the DAISY Consortium, so that you can get more information on how to become a part of this.
Yeah, so you can head over to daisy.org as well if you're looking for more information on that.
Yeah, yes. A company in Japan called, I think, KNS has developed or is in the process of developing a robot that will act as a guide dog.
Yeah. Apparently, they came up with this idea previously and had a model that would accidentally trip over itself.
Yeah, so this is version 3 now, and they have modified the legs. It essentially, how did you describe it? A seat cushion with legs?
It looks kind of like a seat cushion or a large bread box or something. It's kind of hard to describe the shape of it. It's kind of like a rectangle, but it's got legs that come down, four legs, of course, because it is a dog. You've got to have four legs.
Absolutely.
It does have a little thing coming up on top that looks like maybe a camera sensor or something.
It's a Kinect.
Yeah, it sort of looks
Kinect
like
it is a Kinect camera.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yes.
Okay.
They've given it a Kinect camera this time.
Yeah, so it comes up on a neck that kind of makes it look like a dog's head, you know, but the legs actually will walk and climb accordingly. It can roll across smooth surfaces. So, looks bizarre. I think you would definitely get a lot of attention if you were walking along with this.
Yeah.
And no clue as to what such a contraption would cost, but I'm guessing a lot.
Yeah. Another company developing a new hardware device that costs a lot is GW Micro, who has developed the ReadEasy Plus. And this is a scanning reading device that is very portable. It looks like a little box. And the box has the controls on it, and it also has inside of it the camera arm, which comes out of the box and has the camera, 5-megapixel camera at the end of it, and it will scan a page in around 5 seconds. The way the camera is built, it also scans rounded surfaces like cans and bottles if you wanted to scan food items into this device. The device stores approximately 100,000 pages of text data. You can export files in a number of different formats, including MP3. You know, this is scanning and reading, of course, so it's going to read aloud what it scans and store it in its own memory. You can export files in all these different formats, image formats, text formats, PDF, and MP3, but you can only import, without scanning, of course, you can only import in image formats, no doc or MP3.
Yeah, and it's, I guess it's probably about the size of a woman's purse or something. It's like 8 by 4 inches.
Yeah.
And looks like it's kind of small. It's a aluminum box. And like you say, it has a telescoping arm that comes up that has your actual scanning device that looks very much like a hover cam.
And then when you read, I mean, you scan, then a few seconds later, it'll start to read the document.
Yeah, and it's getting a little criticism because it is $2,500.
Yes.
I guess it's trying to be sort of in between needing a computer and
not.
It's still a little bit expensive, but I guess it's kind of on the same par as, what was the little boombox looking thing that was like a Braille embosser? Was that like something from Optelec? I can't remember.
The boombox.
There was something that we had talked about previously that was like $2,500 that I can't remember whether it did scanning or whether it was an embosser, you know, but it was kind of in the same range.
I can't remember either. But what I do know is that you can scan and move through files, I guess. I'm not quite sure how easy it is to navigate on this thing, considering that they have additional packages you can purchase with it, like a navigation keypad.
Or a touchscreen.
Yeah, the touchscreen only works with the LV version of this, which allows you to plug in a monitor as for screen output. The regular $24.95 version does not come with this ability. You have to purchase the ReadEasy LV,
yeah.
LV for low vision, and the touchscreen package works with that.
But it does have a carrying handle.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
On the back, so I don't know. It's probably something that is very delicate, and by having it in this case, maybe it's a little bit more sturdy and safe to carry in a bag.
I like the idea of having everything in a case that you can, like, you know, just pop it out. I like that idea.
Yeah, because it might be small enough that you can just go, hey, I need this.
Mm-hmm. But
I need to carry this with me, and I don't want to carry a laptop.
I don't see that price point. I don't see it.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, I have an iPhone that, with a little bit of tinkering, I can use it to read labels on food and scan you know, documents.
Yeah, and you could also look at a hover cam, which is somewhere between $200 and $500, depending on the model. So I mean, it's kind of similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you're paying for the internal storage and functionality that you have.
Yeah, and the name.
Yeah.
GW Micro. From the expensive, we go to the cheap. Reuters has announced that at least three of the major cable providers here in the U.S., Time Warner, Comcast, and Cablevision, are participating in this, I think it's called Connect to Compete plan, where low-income families across the U.S. will be provided with mobile broadband for a $9.95 a month plan that will last for up to 2 years if they qualify. You must have at least one student. We talked about this in reference to Comcast before. It's
similar. They came out with this idea back in August or September, I think it was.
Yeah, you must have at least one student in your family who subscribed to the free public school lunch program as proof that you're low income, and you can only have the plan for 2 years. It's going to start sometime next year, I believe.
They are going to roll it out slowly in, I believe it is late March, early April.
Yeah.
Selected cities will be able to participate, and a full rollout
nationwide
is scheduled
by
for
September of next year.
And
to go along with that, Redemtek and Microsoft are coming out with reduced-priced laptops.
Microsoft is supposed to be developing a new line of laptops and desktops that will cost about $250, and Redemtek is offering $150
refurbished laptop.
So if you know anyone that is kind of in this class, they might be wanting to know about this.
Yeah.
Because there is a large percentage of the U.S. population that still do not have computers because mm-hmm. they just can't afford it.
And this will not, of course, if you are low income and do not have children, you're kind of not in this. They don't have a plan for that population either. In other words, husband and wife or, you know, single person living in a household, low income. This is primarily for low income families.
Yes.
Google Plus is now open for business, it says.
Literally.
Yes. Previously, of course, you had the ability to create a Google Plus account if you were a person. Now you have the ability to create a brand page if you are a business. And Google has put together a guide for businesses wishing to utilize the features of Google Plus.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because it's sort of a, I don't know how to put it, half-baked way of doing a business page, because you go in, you have to create a business page. You are the only editor. They don't have multiple editors for it. You can't transfer control of that page. So you're always linked to that particular page, or at least at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to have an option where I believe they call it Direct Connect, where you can actually have a plus and your business name for link searches. So like in Google, someone could punch in plus Pepsi and go straight to the Google Plus page for Pepsi. Different things like that. It's getting a lot of flack right now, but as we always know, Google does not roll out things once they're baked. They do it
half-baked. Yeah. Half-assed. Colloquial term.
Yeah. Well, earlier this week, the Barnes & Noble Nook was updated with a new $250 version.
Yes, the Nook tablet has been released. The Nook Color, of course, is the e-reader. And now they have a Nook tablet, I guess, to compete with the Kindle Fire from Amazon. It runs Gingerbread Android platform. It has a 1 gigahertz processor.
I think it's a 1.5. I think
article said one.
Was it one?
Yeah.
Okay.
1 gigahertz processor, 1 gig of RAM, 16 gigs internal storage, upgraded to a 32 gigabyte flash card slot.
Yeah. So it's a little bit of an updated version of the current Nook. No word as far as whether there will be any type of accessibility.
No. And they currently do not have worldwide support for the Android marketplace. You're pretty much stuck with Barnes & Noble's idea of what it wants for your apps. Of course, the Pandora for music, the Hulu for video. You know, they do rely on externals to some extent, but really, you know, you don't have access to the marketplace to go out and buy your own apps and put your own apps on it.
And two, one thing that hasn't been pointed out is it has, I believe, a mono headphone jack.
Ooh.
It does not have a speaker whatsoever for listening to something without headphones.
Wow, I did not know this. That was not in the article that I read.
Yeah.
At least I don't think
it
was.
That's one of the things that I've heard on a couple of podcasts. People are saying that you're going to consume media and it has mono headphones.
Mono!
I think
it is. For God's sake. No stereo even. That's pretty bad.
But I don't even know that the Kindle Fire has stereo. Not sure.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
But all of those products should be out sometime next week.
Yeah.
Including the Kindle Fire that is inaccessible, but maybe people will get upset over the Barnes & Noble Nook as well as the Kindle Fire.
Maybe.
Nobody ever mentions the Nook.
No one mentions Barnes & Noble. They all just mention Kindle.
Yeah. It's kind of short-sighted.
Whatever happened to Kobo? Is that completely officially gone?
Kobo still exists.
Really?
And you missed my pun of being short-sighted.
No, I heard it. I just ignored it.
Oh, okay.
See how much you're valued around here?
Yes. My request for British tea earlier went nowhere. What were you
thinking? In Novgorod, in the Russia area of the world, some dude who is apparently like a linguist and a historian and very super intelligent has engaged in this very strange version of grave robbing. He took mummified remains from various historical museums and grave sites, put them in his home, went around to cemeteries, scavenged costumes from graves, in other words, clothing, and dressed these mummies in them. There were like 45 mummies in his house, and the police found them in there. Ew.
That's just bizarre.
That's just gross and disgusting.
Aye.
I have not released his name at this point, but they do have, you know, photographs of him, and they found him and done whatever police in Russia do to arrest people. And he was like a historian who studied burial rituals or something. And burial practices, I guess I should say, in the area. And he had gone around and found these mummies and robbed graves in the area to get clothes for them. And that's just, ooh, I wish we'd had this one at Halloween, but we didn't.
Yeah, this is bizarre. I thought the Asian thing where they were marrying body pillows that looked like anime characters, I thought that was bizarre. But this is just
disturbing.
Into that direction of freaky, creepy.
Ugh.
And the fact that he dresses them up.
I know.
What does his neighbors or friends think? Well, wait a minute. He most likely has neither because
right. Well, I was just about to say
creating his own dinner party.
Yeah. Ew.
I wonder if he has royal Dutton with periwinkles.
Dutton. Hand-painted periwinkles.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, so that is our what were you thinking? Because it just, bleh. Some people, I don't understand it.
Yeah, You can't really come up with anything to say creative about this because the story sort of speaks for itself.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. And this maddening mess speaks for itself as chaos. Tech Access Weekly episode
116, which is 2 days late and a dollar short.
Yeah, and to find the articles about this episode, for this episode, whatever, go to delicious.com/techaccess/116. And if you would like to check out the Melting Pot on Mushroom FM, feel free to do so at 7 p.m. Eastern of a Sunday evening.
Because Lord knows Gavin will be there.
Yeah, I hope so. He is definitely starting to be a loyal listener. And with all that said, we will simply say,
you can follow me on Twitter at Rodney Edgar.
And I'm Aaron Edgar.
And we'll just say, bye-bye.
Bye.